Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Because Stone Cold said so.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the WWE Podcast. It is Sunday, February 23rd, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me on this Sunday evening. And we've got a lot to discuss today because Super Showdown is this Thursday. Yeah, I said it right. This Thursday at noon Eastern Time. And I don't know if anybody within the sound of my voice that is living in the United States, or in Canada for that matter, will be watching this damn thing live. I would assume that most of us will be at work. But for those few that are watching it live, please do not send me your comments on the show until later in the evening, because I won't be getting home until evening and watching the show there. So I'm going to try to keep all the spoilers and all those things to a minimum so that I can come home and enjoy it in real time in Matt's world, right? In my own brain, be able to enjoy it and see it for the first time. So thank you guys for joining me. And we're going to get to the discussion with Anthony DeMarco as we preview and give our predictions for the Super Showdown that is in the beloved Saudi Arabia. I say that with all the sarcasm in the world. So we discuss everything, not just about the pay-per-view and predictions, but we really covered other topics that aren't being evolved or moved on in the pay-per-view, including Orton and Edge and Hardy, as well as Becky Lynch and Shayna Baszler, who John Cena potentially is going to be facing at WrestleMania. Would Goldberg and Roman Reigns be on the table? I mean, there's a lot to discuss here, as the matches for WrestleMania have apparently been, the major matches have been flipped on their heads, as I had a feeling and warned people that could happen, given that when Vince gets a sniff of the fans seeing something coming and seeing it for a long time, likes to flip things around. So we go over that potential as well of what that could be and who that could be, as well as the Undertaker versus AJ Styles. Yeah, that we discussed that as well. So we really, really went into depth on a lot of different topics and, of course, gave our predictions for the show as well. That is ultimately and largely a very predictable on-paper show. And we mentioned several times that's not necessarily a bad thing if indeed the predictable thing is the right thing to do. So while this card, up and down, other than maybe one match, is pretty much bank on it, it's not a bad thing. If the match story is told well, if the pacing is done well, if the actual wrestling is high quality and makes sense, I'm okay with the outcome being predictable at times. So this is a perfect example of that kind of card. But all right, well, we're going to get to the predictions in just a minute. But before I do, I just want to invite anybody who hasn't already done so to follow me on Twitter at the WWE Podcast. And you can head to the website too at WWEPodcast.com. And yeah, we have a Facebook thing too. We have a Facebook page at the WWE Podcast. It's facebook.com/the WWE Podcast. And you can also, if you want to help the show, give us a rating and review, a positive rating and review on Apple Podcasts or really anywhere that you have podcasts available to you. It is a big, big help to the show. You can also head on over to Patreon if you don't like ads, and you can get this show ad-free with video and with blogs that are exclusive and getting a shout-out on the show and getting a video shout-out coming on the show and all that kind of stuff. So lots to do and check out there, patreon.com/WWE Podcast. So as far as the week goes, guys, just kind of giving you the lay of the land for the schedule. We're going to be doing a bit of a revised schedule this week with the pay-per-view. So Tuesday, I'll be joined by a co-host that you know. He has joined me on the show before. Michael Gross will be joining me on Tuesday to cover Monday Night Raw. And then Wednesday will be your wrestling nostalgia. Thursday will be AEW NXT review. And tomorrow, I went a little bit backwards, but tomorrow I'm also going to be publishing Aiden Willis's analysis for Super Showdown. So you'll get to hear an alternate perspective on the Super Showdown pay-per-view and a couple of other topics. That'll be published on Monday, the 24th. And then I said Tuesday, Michael Gross will be joining me. Wednesday's Nostalgia. Thursday is going to be a bit of a weird day. I know the pay-per-views that day, but AEW and NXT are going to be published on Thursday and Friday. And I'm going to be also doing a review show for the pay-per-view this week too. So that may come before your normal Sunday show. So I'm thinking of maybe swapping a nostalgia day for a Friday review day. And the reason I'm not maybe not doing both is I just, you know, I kind of want to have a happy wife, happy life, right? And I have very limited time to do these things. So I may try to do both if time permits. And, I want to make sure that I am also happy at home and I don't cause any kind of stress with family. So I'm going to look at doing both a Nostalgia Wednesday and also a review for the pay-per-view on Friday. If I can't, I may skip Nostalgia Wednesday and do just the pay-per-view review, which I think is more important for the current product than the Wrestling Nostalgia, which I know you guys love. But I'm looking at the bigger picture of being able to give you guys an analysis of what I think in real time. And I think Friday may be a good day to do that. So I'm going to let you know as time goes along for the week. So anyway, that's the schedule for the week. And I hope you guys enjoy it. And without further ado, guys, let's get to the Super Showdown review / preview with co-host Anthony DeMarco. So enjoy, and I'll talk to you guys next time. Welcome to Super Showdown Week as we creep closer to that all-important and heavily viewed Thursday afternoon at noon pay-per-view start time in Saudi Arabia, which makes sense considering it's 8 o'clock their time and 12 o'clock Eastern. So I can't imagine many people will be watching it live, but I'm excited today to have Anthony back on the show as we gear up for our Super Showdown pay-per-view, creep closer to the ever-important WrestleMania, and discuss all of the different things really going on in WWE right now, from Otis to Goldberg to Undertaker rumor. I mean, it's just all over the damn place as we ramp up towards WrestleMania. So Anthony, welcome back.
Glad to be back, man. How's it going?
It's going, man. It's a crazy ass time in wrestling right now. And I mean, honestly, it's hard to know where to start. I mean, we're going to get to the Super Showdown predictions in just a few minutes, but I got to ask you, because some of these things that I'm going to ask you aren't being reflected on the pay-per-view. And number one, to me, item A is Orton, Hardy, Edge, that whole storyline. I'm very curious to see what you think about it, if you think it's effective, if you like Orton in this role. I know that you've been a fan so far, but with what he did to Matt Hardy this past Monday night, and you see people in the crowd crying, which I absolutely loved, what did you think about this? How are they doing so far?
I think they're knocking it out of the park. You know, I said a couple months back that at this stage in his career, I kind of preferred Orton as a babyface. Because, you know, anytime he dropped the RKO and whatnot, like, it was just a huge pop. But now, ever since they started with this angle following the Royal Rumble with Edge, it's really sucked me back in into really remembering what Randy Orton does best, and that's being a sadistic heel. It reminds me a lot of when he was leading Legacy and he was punting the McMahons in the head and that whole angle back in 2009, I believe it was. And I think the problem has been for Orton is that he's been more or less stuck in obscurity for a long, long time now, probably since his WrestleMania match with Seth Rollins at WrestleMania 2015. Yeah, the 31. And I know he won the Royal Rumble in 2017, and he had that lackluster feud with Bray Wyatt where he won the WWE Championship at WrestleMania 33. But I think I preferred him as a babyface because no matter who he fought, as a heel, it never really felt right. You always still cheered for Orton. When he was fighting Bobby Roode, you were still going to cheer for Randy Orton. But now that he's actually in a meaningful feud against he's had an interaction or two with Edge, but he's engaged with somebody that the crowd really beloves, and he's able to garner that true heel heat. And now he's being exposed for what he does best. Incorporating Matt Hardy, it's kind of another legacy star, not to the same magnitude of Edge and Randy Orton, but still in that same ballpark. And just doing that back-to-back weeks, gaining that heat, it's a slow burn. I like how they've kept Edge off of television for, I believe, about a month now. And they haven't even really referred to him as to when he's going to come back. So I think they've done an excellent job and probably easily the best thing they have going right now.
I would second that. I mean, this is probably the best thing WWE has executed in, my God, 5 years more. Everything has just gone to perfection. You could nitpick things, but it's not even worth discussing. And, you know, some people this past week were really annoyed at Randy Orton as to how long he took. And, oh my God, is he just going to do something? This is taking too long. He's dragging it out. I actually heard people complain about it. And they were legitimately getting angry about it. And I said, you must not have been exposed to true heel heat. It's been quite a while, because anybody complaining about that segment that Randy dragged on, and I understand the frustration, and I had to kind of restrain my own knee-jerk reactions to that, because I haven't seen or felt true heel heat from a performer, a wrestler, in years. And that is the point. I know that's a 3-hour show, so probably the side effect was, hey, we get to chew up 20 minutes plus and kill half of our first hour with Randy just out there doing what he's doing. At the same time, that is something that annoyed people, and that's the job of a heel. People have forgotten, and the definition of a heel has almost been kind of warped into this, well, we don't like them, but they're always entertaining. And that's been the problem over the last 5 to 10 years is, no, that's not what a heel should be. A heel should piss you off every step of the way. And Randy Orton has done just that. He is damn brilliant right now. And credit to Matt Hardy, who has been more relevant now than he has in the last 10 years in WWE. And obviously Edge out there, as you just mentioned, gone for a month. I love it. I love that. And there's things that you can do to continue to build that. And it was mentioned on my show last week, and I'm going to not take credit for it. It was Ashley who brought it up, and I've brought it up several times, but it's such a good idea. Having Randy Orton come out there and RKO maybe Beth Phoenix on NXT, or RKO Christian coming out to defend him. There's things you can do to continue to build this, building and building and building to Edge's monumental return. So this is an A+ all around for me.
Well, it's because if you circle back on Randy Orton's career, like, all of his extreme high points were him as a heel. You know, WrestleMania 21 against The Undertaker, WrestleMania 22, he was in the triple threat match with Rey Mysterio and Kurt Angle. And then I'm not sure if it was 24 or 25 when he main evented with Triple H. I want to say 25. Am I right with that, Matt?
Yes.
Yeah. So then, you know, he had some minor babyface like matches and runs, but he had that extensive never ending feud with Cena. And you just kind of get brought back into from this whole angle that this is where he belongs. This is his niche. And while he is a legacy star and can get by on being a babyface almost solely by the RKO, you just really see him at his best in this type of role. And like you said, there's just so many avenues you can go down. And utilizing Matt Hardy, I like it. At first, I was just like, well, this is kind of stupid because these guys have legitimately hated each other 15 years ago. But at least they referenced it. At least Matt actually referenced him. We weren't made to believe that we were supposed to be idiots and forget about it. So, you know what? It's been A's across the board for WWE for this specific angle.
It has. And I mean, again, I don't know what more to say about this and giving it high praise. It's very rare that I can give WWE this much credit and not poke holes in things. If, you know, if you're looking at one thing, okay, maybe the fact that you had a wrestler out there who was not cleared to compete, and you have Randy Orton out there who's just, you know, basically putting the lives of the superstars in jeopardy by slamming their heads into chairs, and nobody comes out for 20 minutes to help Matt Hardy. I mean, that would be a huge liability on the company. But, you know, those kinds of things aside, it's something I briefly would think about and then go, well, I don't care, because this angle is just so damn good. And Matt Hardy laying there like a corpse, it was really uncomfortable to watch. And in a PG environment, that's not easy to do. So I love this whole thing. Any other final comments on this story before we get into some other topics?
No, like there's pretty much not that much to dissect because it's all positive.
Mm-hmm. I know. It's funny. The things that are awesome are it's so easy and quick to talk about because the bitching about the stuff that you don't like is what you can really sink your teeth into. So, all right, well, let's move on. And I guess the next topic I want to ask you about is, well, Drew McIntyre, who, you know, he, to me, first of all, I think you and I both are in concert that, hey, he was the right choice. I still love the choice. And it seems as if they're kind of putting him in a holding pattern for, you know, fitting into Brock's non-schedule of being there every 4 weeks and having him relevant, coming out and being relatable, being likable, even being trying to be comedic at times. I like the kind of laid back but intense Drew McIntyre, who has long overdue. He's never gotten a WWE championship opportunity. I think WWE can't miss here unless they really botch this at WrestleMania and have Brock go over. But ultimately, I think this is right now, they have seemed to be really listening to the fans, and I'm loving where Drew is at. And again, they're just kind of holding steady and steering the course as we wait for this to really start heating up after Super Showdown.
Yeah, well, you know, the one knock on it I would have is that, as you alluded to, he's kind of been in a holding pattern, and that's where I kind of miss the days where there's only one pay-per-view between Rumble and Mania, because you wouldn't have so much time just to kill. And for the Royal Rumble winner, you can't really have him dive into something legitimate because he knows that in a month and a half from now, he has the world title at WrestleMania. Like, I remember when it was No Way Out in the mid-2000s, and that was only a one pay-per-view show. It only belonged to one pay-per-view. So I find that he's kind of been a victim of that, you know, having a meaningless program for what it's worth with MVP. But aside from that, I like the way that they're trying to humanize him, have him, give him a bit of a character. I would have liked to maybe see him have a month-long program with a guy like Bobby Lashley, who's kind of lost in obscurity right now. But aside from that, like you said, you can't miss with it. Maybe they could have dragged it out a bit more, like he could have waited to have an interaction with Brock Lesnar as opposed to the night directly after. But aside from that, it really is can't miss. And I think we all know that Brock Lesnar is going to beat Ricochet. But after that, it's just kind of all systems go heading into WrestleMania.
Yeah, it is. And I'm really looking forward to getting past this pay-per-view. I mean, let's face it. I mean, you and I talked off the air. Some people love this pay-per-view. Well, probably a few. I should say a few people probably love this pay-per-view. I would say the majority are probably somewhere in the middle of indifferent, and probably a significant number of those people also will protest or disdain this pay-per-view because of where it's held and the black cloud that is following WWE and will continue to follow them for this, well, 8 more years of this contract until it's over. So I understand the feeling of this pay-per-view, and the fact is, regardless of where it's held, as you said, I'm of the belief of one pay-per-view between Rumble and Mania. I don't like two stops. It especially with Super Showdown, kind of viewed as, to me, as, you know, it's kind of like it's a pay-per-view, but it's not one that is really, I don't want to say it's directionless or it's an exhibition type pay-per-view, but it kind of feels that way at times. And, you know, maybe they'll start to change the way I feel about this pay-per-view as time goes on, but it always just kind of feels like a house show that's, you know, but with somebody that is got an endless bank account that throws together these dream matches. And, you know, as Ted DiBiase says, everyone's got a price. I mean, you had Shawn Michaels come out of retirement. That even hurts my soul to say for this. And it, you know, so this pay-per-view is kind of tainted in a lot of ways, but, you know, I'm still going to watch. I know some people won't, but, you know, I don't know. This is a very touch and go pay-per-view that I think ultimately is not necessary, but it's there for what? Simply the money. I mean, there's no other reason, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, you have a lot of these, like, meaningless matches that are made to be like something of significance. Like I saw like a gauntlet match for some trophy that I'm not really sure what it is. We saw the world's the best in the world tournament made famous by Shane McMahon. Then the best tag team in the world tournament, the last one at Crown Jewel in October. So you know what? It is what it is. I'm actually intrigued by some of the matches. We'll get into the whole Fiend Goldberg stuff down the road, but I'm sure that Roman Reigns versus Baron Corbin will be solid enough. I'm sure that Ricochet and Brock Lesnar will be a good match. I'm actually kind of looking forward to see the dynamic between them, but it just kind of feels like an unnecessary stop to WrestleMania. It's just, it's not needed. And like you said, it really isn't a pay-per-view. It's almost like a special attraction match. Like it's almost like Saturday night main event, you know, inflated by a million. But I don't know. I like you said, I'm going to watch. I'm going to see what it is. It still does kind of pertain to the everyday storyline on Raw and SmackDown. But I'm with you. And as I've said before, I like just one pay-per-view belonging to either show between Rumble and Mania.
Well, like I said, I mean, 8 more years of this 10-year contract. I mean, we better just buckle in. Anybody that despises this pay-per-view and you and I aren't fans simply just because of not where it's held. I mean, that certainly doesn't help considering all of the bad publicity that the country's gotten with, you know, women's rights and all that, you know, kind of thing. But it's just the fact of the placement of the pay-per-view is to me just it's kind of annoying. And then you have Elimination Chamber 2 weeks later and it's like boom, boom. And then you have to wait 5 weeks and you got WrestleMania. Whatever. I mean, it is what it is, and you know, I'm still going to watch. As you said, I am intrigued by several matches more than I normally am for this pay-per-view. You know, when I see Super Showdown on the pay-per-view lineup, I'm like, well, there's a waste of a pay-per-view. You know, there's one I'll have to watch, but nothing really of substance is going to come out of it. I think this one could be different because it's so close to WrestleMania. So, and like you said, we're going to get into the predictions in very, very soon. But I do want your thoughts on a couple more things that probably won't be addressed on the pay-per-view. And that is, well, Becky and Shayna Baszler. I haven't talked to you since the whole bite, since Becky Lynch's follow-up and her bringing her bag of cash to flaunt that she has, you know, hundreds of dollars. Although, if you notice, there was a lot of ones in that the close-up. And saying, I'll pay my fine up front, and Shayna is on big screen, you know, acting like too cool for school. I'm going to toss this to you as far as how do you think they're doing so far on this Shayna Baszler-Becky build-up, obviously, that's going to culminate at WrestleMania?
Honestly, I really don't like what they've done aside from the biting thing. I like that. I know it was edgy. You talked about it on your Raw review about how you liked it, even though it was a bit hokey. That part I really enjoyed. That being said, it's a really short-sighted build. For one, Becky has just readopted this whole, you know, arrogancy that I think is more heelish and annoying than anything. Like the whole ambulance thing, like her driving herself, like, come on, like, you're not Stone Cold Steve Austin. That isn't cool. And just like her, like, trying to like run roughshod on like the whole like medical team who's helping her. It just doesn't really seem like a babyface thing to do. When she came out with the sunglasses, like all that stuff, the arrogancy with the bag of money, like you referred to. And aside from Becky just being very unlikable, it's also like, well, you're pretty much assuring that they're going to fight at WrestleMania, but then there's a number one contenders match between the women at the Elimination Chamber with Shayna Baszler in it. But we know that Shayna Baszler is going to win, because why else would you invest all this time into building a feud between them? So you've kind of taken the whole intrigue about the women's Elimination Chamber at Elimination Chamber. So just that coupled with Becky's arrogance, I've really been disappointed after a promising start with the biting.
Yeah, I mean, if you listen to my review, it's not really anything revolutionary I'm going to come and follow up on, but I'm with you. I feel like I'm in the minority, and you are, sounds like, too, of people that actually enjoyed the bite and how, well, they could have just had them stand together, but I mean, that's a that's something that is always what the case is. And this is something that is just to the extreme right off the bat, which I'm fine with. You know, I'm fine with that. But as you alluded to, yeah, they have really taken Becky Lynch. And honestly, it's hard for me to be critical of this if the goal is to eventually turn Becky Lynch heel at WrestleMania or maybe shortly thereafter, Monday Night Raw after. I mean, if that's the goal, then okay, I can see where they're planting seeds right now, and they've been planting seeds for quite some time, with her arrogance and her over-the-top goat jackets and, you know, Thug Life sunglasses she came out with and bags of money. It's over-the-top arrogance now, and it's been like that for quite some time. So I would think that they are probably heading that way of turning Becky heel. I would hope if it's a long story arc to get her there, because if it's not, they need to be a little more self-aware of what her actions are and what is going to undermine the babyface character in the minds of fans when you have her just being over the top arrogant and just acting like she's some kind of, you know, acting like she's like a god, for lack of a better word. I don't like it. I've been kind of against the Becky train for a while now. Of okay, I've had it. Let's see what else somebody else can do it. But they're riding this thing all to WrestleMania, all the way to WrestleMania. But I will say that at WrestleMania, WWE better be careful about the crowd reaction, because I think fans are getting weary of Becky Lynch holding that championship, and I think they're ready for new blood to take over and somebody as credible as Shayna Baszler.
Well, you just brought up before with Randy Orton, you know, he's getting true heel heat, not the cool heel heat. And that's what's happening with Shayna Baszler. You know, for me, I like what Shayna Baszler brings, but like you brought up about Becky, it's getting so over the top. And the arrogancy coupled with the fact of how long she's been champion, now going up against a natural fan favorite like Shayna Baszler, I don't know what they're in for. Maybe they're just trying to go an organic route and let the crowd choose to choose who to boo or who to cheer. But I don't know. It's just something for me that right now with Becky, that like you brought up, unless they're planning to turn her heel, it just seems like they're building this program in a short-sighted view. And the thing about the chamber really, really bothers me, because, you know, I gave you the suggestion for the first Elimination Chamber for Wrestling Nostalgia a week and a half ago, because it's always been my favorite match. I kind of grew up with that match. You know, I was 8 years old when they introduced the first ever chamber match. But now it's almost just becoming like, I don't know if it's not a fad, that's not the word I'm looking for, but it's almost just like a puppet match. And like, now you're taking the whole intrigue away from who could possibly win. It's predictable that it's going to be Shayna Baszler. So maybe that whole thing made me sour on it more than anything else. But I don't know, this last week, the build that they did for it, I was just really not impressed with.
That's the thing too. The Elimination Chamber, which is something that people are forgetting about because it's going to be a very quick turnaround to the next pay-per-view. Yes, it is a foregone conclusion, and I don't want to hear of, well, they could shock the world, and with who? Who are they going to shock the world with? Liv Morgan? Sarah Logan, who hasn't won a match maybe ever in WWE? I mean, who else is in there, right? Like, who's the other one that was part of the riots? Ruby Riott, who hasn't, I mean, like, what have they done to even earn it? And furthermore, you have Shayna Baszler in there, who gets rewarded for her actions against Becky Lynch by being put in this match against a very weak lineup. I mean, this isn't one that's top heavy. I mean, this is just, it's already fallen over. I don't see how in the freaking world that Shayna Baszler doesn't win this outside of doing, you know, having somebody win and then Shayna takes the win back next, you know, that next Monday night, and somehow the decision gets reversed. Outside of something bizarre like that, there is no other alternative. There is no one else in that match in the Elimination Chamber that makes any sort of sense to win beyond Shayna Baszler. I mean, so this isn't really about Shayna winning as much as it is how quickly does she dominate? Does Becky come in and attack? I think it's more of that than anything else. I mean, this is just, you talk about predictability. I mean, this is one for the record books of who's going to come out on top.
Well, it just sucks, you know, because like going into the chamber originally, you know, there was always three, maybe four guys who you really knew didn't have that much of a chance, but there's never been an instance where you know it's like, yeah, it's going to be him. Like when you did the review of the first ever chamber match, like everyone kind of thought it was going to be Triple H or Shawn Michaels, but it's not like Jericho or Kane were completely out of the realm of possibility. You know, you just riled off some of the wrestlers who are in this match, like Sarah Logan, Liv Morgan, Ruby Riott. Like this is just irrelevancy in terms of contending for the women's championship. And I just hate it that it just dilutes what the chamber means. It's supposed to be something that isn't just a stop in the road. It should come in at a random point. It used to happen at Survivor Series or SummerSlam or New Year's Revolution. Like, these are things that, I don't know, like, we've seen it with Hell in a Cell and TLC that's just kind of like a gimmick pay-per-view that I really do not like, and the chamber more so than anything else, because it's supposed to be like a special feeling when there's a bunch of like storylines interlocking with one another and it all culminates being put inside the chamber. And now you have this one that's more like, it's like the least star-studded one arguably ever, and it's the most predictable one arguably ever. So I don't know, there's that being mixed in with the feud of Becky and Shayna has just really just put a damper on the whole thing for me.
Well, I think the point of this is because they want to make sure that the women get a Elimination Chamber match. It's not just the men. They got to even it out, even if it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. They got to put them in there because the men have a match. And furthermore, you have people in there that don't even deserve to be in the conversation of it being in a tournament for a women's championship, much less in the women's Elimination Chamber championship opportunity match for the number one contendership. I mean, again, this just falls back to wins and losses don't mean a damn thing in wrestling. And I understand that they don't always have to, and I appreciate AEW and they're keeping track of wins and losses. And the problem with that is you could book yourself into a corner if you have somebody with more wins, not getting an opportunity that somebody has who has less wins. I understand all that. At the same time, I mean, just name me one time in the last 2 months, 3 months, in which Ruby Riott or Sarah Logan have won a match. I mean, seriously, yes, Liv Morgan has beaten Lana a few times. Wonderful. Lana can't, I mean, like, seriously, my 8-year-old niece could probably out-wrestle Lana in the ring. I mean, it's not a heavy lift to beat Lana in the ring, at least is how she's been defined. So the point is, wins and losses don't matter, clearly, because you have just the bottom of the barrel here in the match beyond Shayna Baszler, and then you have it just being kind of an obligatory, well, the men have it, so the women got to have an Elimination Chamber match.
Yeah, it's just, and it's kind of exposing the lack of, I don't know, depth that the Raw Women's Division has, because when the split got made, they got Becky and Charlotte and Asuka, so they were so top-heavy that everyone automatically assumed they had the better Women's Division. But Asuka's a tag team champion, and she's just kind of there and shackled to those belts, which in my mind are just doing more harm than good right now. And now Charlotte's facing Rhea Ripley, so she's kind of half Raw, half NXT. And it's gone to the point now on Raw with the rest of the division that they had to go get an NXT superstar to come onto Raw. And then you look at the SmackDown side, and while they're missing some top-heavy talent, you see the depth that they have in Lacey Evans and Carmella and Naomi and Alexa Bliss, if she ever, you know, has a legitimate singles push again. And I think, you know, the SmackDown side is hurting despite having more of a depth. Like, why didn't you just, you know, you could have had Shayna Baszler versus Becky booked organically for Mania. Charlotte has picked Rhea Ripley. Why not have three women from SmackDown and three women from Raw go in the chamber? And if the Raw women win, they could cross over to SmackDown. We've seen that before in brand split eras. I don't know. I just think there could have been way more logical and impactful ways they could have gone about this in the chamber, and they've just picked a really short-sighted route.
They have, and I'm fearful too at WrestleMania it's going to be some kind of six-woman, four Or some kind of like six woman battle royale or some kind of fatal four way elimination match for the SmackDown Women's Championship, which is ultimately going to be the kind of the redheaded stepchild when you look at the three championship belts for the women. So anyway, I mean, we're talking about Chamber and we're not even there. I mean, so the only other thing that the rumors of Goldberg coming back, well, not Goldberg coming back, but John Cena coming back. He's coming back Friday, next Friday, after the Super Showdown pay-per-view. A lot of rumors floating around. He could be facing Elias. That's kind of been nixed. I don't see any place in the world for that match on so many levels. Not only have we seen it, both are babyface. That's not a WrestleMania-worthy match, even if they were on opposing sides. It just makes no sense, and from everything I'm reading and seeing, that seems to have been nixed, and I think it was kind of a hoax anyway that WWE purposely leaked to mislead fans. So if Cena comes back, and he is, who do you think he possibly could be setting up for at WrestleMania? I mean, there's some options out there. You could do The Fiend. You could do Goldberg, God forbid. I mean, Goldberg, it's possible. I mean, the other rumor is that The Fiend and Roman Reigns is no longer a match at WrestleMania. And if that is indeed the case, I'm all for it because that's not a match I want to see. From the perspective of I don't need Roman Reigns in that position, given that it is I hate to say it's a foregone conclusion that he'd win, but there's no win for WWE in that match. Because Roman wins and he gets booed out of the building because it's, you know, WWE fans resenting WWE for building this awesome character up only to be fed to Roman Reigns. And you can't have The Fiend win clean because then all of that goodwill that WWE has built over the last year with Roman Reigns then gets flushed down the toilet. So there's really no good outcome there, and the fans could easily turn on that match. So if that is indeed the case, The Fiend versus John Cena may be more intriguing than, God forbid, Goldberg versus John Cena. So just a little thought there. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, if that is the case, that it's no longer The Fiend versus Roman Reigns, which honestly we kind of talked about a bit over text, and I'm really scared that they're going to do Roman Reigns versus Goldberg at WrestleMania, and I think it's more and more possible, especially given the events that happened on SmackDown this week, that Goldberg could become a two-time Universal Champion, which would be absolutely catastrophic for The Fiend. But that being said, they've done Bray Wyatt versus John Cena already at WrestleMania, obviously in the old Bray Wyatt character. But so I could see that, especially he would be the perfect guy to take out The Fiend. But I don't know if it would mean as much if Goldberg takes away the belt. The one guy who I could see Cena facing would be Braun Strowman on a few different levels. One, Braun Strowman has never had a meaningful match at WrestleMania. You know, his highest profile match was the tag team match against The Bar and the 7-year-old. And aside from that, it's just been Battle Royal, Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal like he did last year. So giving him a match against John Cena would give him automatically more credibility and his biggest WrestleMania moment to date. Second is the Intercontinental Championship is a belt that Cena's ever won. And it's the only one keeping him away from being a Grand Slam champion. And for a guy like John Cena, arguably the best wrestler of all time, having not won the Intercontinental Championship, which is, in my mind, the second most prestigious title in WWE, that could be something. And over the last few WrestleManias, you know, John Cena's fought against some lower competition, you know, fighting against Rusev and Bray Wyatt, and he had the mixed tag team match with The Miz and Maryse. So I don't know, like I could see him versus Braun Strowman for a few different reasons.
I think that would be a good match. I mean, would it be the most technically sound match? No. It would certainly be a slower-paced kind of power-for-power move. And seeing him FU, or AA rather, Braun Strowman would be I'd love to see it. I mean, just the visual of it. We know he can physically do it. And for him to challenge for the Intercontinental Championship certainly would add more value to that belt. That would be the case of not the belt making the guy making the belt. And that certainly would bode well for the championship that I think needs a boost. Even around the waist of Braun Strowman, I think it needs a boost because it's again, an afterthought. You hear even the announcers who are more concerned about the great liberator Sami Zayn. And hey, I love Sami Zayn and his gimmick. but the focus should be the belt, and it very rarely is. It's not guys who are, you know, scratching and clawing and asking for championship opportunities against Braun Strowman for the Intercontinental Championship. It's just an afterthought, and even around the waist of Braun Strowman, it's the case. So for John Cena to go after it, I think would be beneficial for the championship, which, as you and I believe, is should be the number one priority. And I wouldn't be so concerned about a babyface versus babyface match and who should turn heel. I wouldn't turn either of them heel. I would keep both of them as is if you're going to do that match and just let the crowd decide. We know John Cena's not here for long, so I think the outcome would probably be determined, at least, you know, in most fans' minds, of Braun Strowman probably beating John Cena at this point in his career. There's no need for John Cena to go on a long run, unless he has like a 2 month break in his schedule where he could be there on a semi-regular basis to defend the belt, and it would make him a Grand Slam champion. But I think that having Braun Strowman carry the belt and beat somebody of John Cena's caliber would definitely boost his value and ultimately the Intercontinental Championship value.
Yeah, so I would like that on numerous different levels, but now if there is legitimacy that they're going to change the avenue and the direction of the world of the Universal title approaching WrestleMania, I guess all bets are off. Like, I wouldn't be opposed to a Fiend versus John Cena match, but it's like, if the Fiend loses to Goldberg, like, all the credibility is going to be killed. So it's just going to kind of suck the air out of that momentum. Maybe if the Fiend never won the Universal Championship and just had a non-title match and non-title matches leading up to a bout with Cena at Mania, I could get behind it. But I just can't see there any being real intrigue for Cena facing the Fiend after dropping the title to Goldberg. I think just for numerous reasons, Cena versus Braun Strowman makes sense for all the reasons you just point out. But as for the Universal title picture, I don't think they even know where they're going, because, like, why are you bringing back Goldberg just to put him over on the Fiend? I hope it's just to make the Fiend look that much more dangerous come WrestleMania, and if and when he fights Roman Reigns, it isn't just such a slam dunk that Roman Reigns walks out. That's where I'm hoping that they're going, because if the Fiend loses at the belt to Goldberg, even though the Fiend versus Roman Reigns isn't something I necessarily want to see, it's going to absolutely kill all the goodwill they've done over the past 9-10 months with Bray Wyatt.
It's like having Seth Rollins go against the Fiend, which, I mean, I was uncomfortable with it at the time, and it's not hindsight being 2020. I was, weeks before that pay-per-view, I said, this is not a good idea. Why are they doing this? They're booking themselves into a corner. It doesn't feel right. It's way too soon. Why are they doing this? And ultimately, we know the disaster that occurred at Hell in a Cell. So Roman Reigns and the Fiend. Is it a match that's going to happen? Yes. Is it a match that needs to happen? Yes. Does that mean it needs to happen on April 5th? No, it doesn't. It does not mean it needs to happen at WrestleMania 36. You can wait and keep these two apart and build it, my God, another year. I don't know if WWE will have the patience to do that, considering of how quickly they tend to burn through matches. But if Roman Reigns, you know, finds somebody else that he can feud with for 6 months like he did with Baron Corbin, hey, there's half your year gone that you could then have to worry about just finding another few opponents until next year's WrestleMania for Roman Reigns. So, all right. Well, I want to actually just get to – well, actually, let me ask you this. What are some other topics maybe that aren't going to be covered on the pay-per-view that you wanted to touch on before we get into the predictions and preview?
Well, I'm not really sure if there's a match booked for it, because I didn't have a chance to go over the complete card. But the whole Monday Night Messiah, Kevin Owens thing, I'm not really sure what they're doing with it. I feel as if maybe they started it a bit too early, before Royal Rumble to build it to WrestleMania. Now, from week to week, they're kind of just juggling it and just trying to do a rinse and repeat type of thing. Now, apparently, Samoa Joe is legitimately hurt, so that kind of threw a wrench into their plans. But while I like what Seth Rollins is doing right now, and I like KO, it just feels like it's getting a bit repetitive. And, like, as I'm not sure if there's any type of match booked for Super Showdown, but when this started, I was super intrigued on it, and I loved Raw, but as of late, it's just felt kind of repetitive and redundant.
That particular angle, I will agree with you on. Overall, I think Raw has been vastly improved for a number of months. Without its, I mean, it has its occasional downs, more ups than downs, though. And I think that overall, Raw has been a better product. And to answer your question, yes, there is a Raw Tag Team Championship match between Seth Rollins and Murphy versus the Street Profits. So they are indeed going to be getting some type of spotlight at the pay-per-view. So I don't know. Again, this is what boggles my mind is the Street Profits interrupt at the end of Raw to come to the aid of the Viking Raiders and Kevin Owens, who is again about to get his ass beat down for like the 18th week in a row. Great way to build a babyface, by the way. And then you have the Street Profits make the save, and making that save just warrants and grants them in a Raw Tag Team Championship match. I mean, what? I mean, this is like pre-show stuff. I mean, if that happens, so.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I wasn't a huge fan of Seth Rollins and Murphy winning the tag team titles. I thought that would have been better suited for the AOP, just because I think Seth shouldn't be in a tag team type mixture, and Murphy has to be at least the fifth or sixth guy that he's won the tag team titles with. Like, oh my God, he's becoming the modern day Kane in that regard for different tag team partners to win the belts. But like, I don't know, like it just seems like it's gonna be Seth Rollins versus KO at Mania, and until then they're just kind of like juggling it and trying to keep them both relevant. And maybe this would have been best suited to start post Royal Rumble. I love what they've done on Raw, and like you said, it's been more than adequate for quite some time now, better than it's been for quite some time. But it's still kind of like, I wish maybe they didn't rush into this and now get into this whole cycle of doing the same things, like you said, of Kevin Owens getting beat down for like the umpteenth week in a row.
And I don't know what, if the end game is Seth Rollins versus KO, I mean, I feel like we've seen that every week on Raw. Yes, not one-on-one, and I understand that. But I don't think that, and I don't know, I hate to prejudge it, because these two on paper, I think, are incredible athletes, great entertainers, and very good in their own right. But having this at WrestleMania would kind of feel redundant again. Unless there's some huge stipulation on the line, this could be some kind of gimmick-based match. Although I'm not a big fan of gimmicks at WrestleMania, it could be. I just don't know what the end game is here for this. And I know that it feels like they've been spinning their wheels for a while. It started out hot. Seth is revealed in that van. He turns around. Boom, AOP come out in their suits. He's their heavies. Murphy joins. And then Kevin Owens and Samoa Joe get beat down week after week after week after week. And then Joe goes down with an injury twice. And then we have Kevin Owens and the Viking Raiders kind of just hanging out there, and they just continue to fight. And that's like the selling point for them, at least on the psychological level of why we're supposed to get behind these guys, because they just continue to fight and they continue to fight and they continue to fight. But guess what keeps happening? They keep getting their ass beat down again and again and again. So it's kind of working against them to use that as a reason for why we're supposed to, you know, get behind them, because they just don't stop and they're relentless, when they just end up with the same result if it wasn't for the Street Profits this past week. So ultimately, I think this could be revived. It's not a dead angle by any means. It just kind of feels like I've been chewing the same piece of gum for a couple of weeks now, and I'm ready for something to be injected into this story in a big way.
Yeah, and not for anything. Like, I like the Viking Raiders, but they're a fun babyface tag team, but I don't know if that's what this angle needed. Just like a new tag team, and I know when they got injected, they were the tag team champions, so there is some legitimacy there. But I just thought that maybe they could have gone a different road with who could have been the backup to give them more legitimacy. And like, not for anything, and I don't mean to come off as judgmental, but when you have the Viking Raiders standing there with KO and Samoa Joe, it's not visually the most intimidating group I've ever seen. It's kind of like a bunch of guys ready to brawl at a pub after a night of boozing. But aside from that, it's like you said, it's just like they're fighting the good fight, but they're ultimately coming out on the losing end. And I know maybe it's a slow burn for a big payoff at Mania that could be Seth Rollins versus KO, But in the meantime, it's just kind of dragging and dragging and dragging. And I just hope that it doesn't lose momentum to the point where the crowd doesn't care anymore.
I hope so. I hope so too. I don't think it'll get to that point. I think what also kind of inadvertently has affected this angle is the return of Edge and how much steam that took out of, I think, this angle and energy and a focus and attention from fans, because that up until Edge's return was the biggest angle Raw had going, and I was giving it praise week after week. So I think kind of as a side effect, and one that obviously is not intentional, is that when something that big happens and then you have Edge come back and the crowd is like, oh my God, this is awesome. You know, we'll remember forever and all this stuff. And you have obviously Orton on top of it being freaking brilliant in his execution. I think that kind of takes the steam away and the focus away from this rivalry that, you know, people were hot for a few weeks. And you had, you know, people talking about how Kevin Owens is finally being focused on for Raw. He's finally the guy that is going to lead Raw, and they're putting Raw on his shoulders. And then boom, you have Edge come back. And that's, you know, this is not anybody's fault. It's just kind of the nature of the beast. And that angle took over and was white hot from the beginning. And then you had just kind of, by the very nature of wrestling, the next thing kind of taken down a peg, if I can talk. That was taken down a peg because of the fact that Edge and Orton and Matt Hardy and whoever else is now going to be involved in this have done such a damn good job. So, I don't know. That's just my thought as to why this is starting to feel stale on top of the kind of repetitive tag team booking that happens week after week after week.
Yeah, and it's kind of like you just painted it out perfectly. It's kind of third on the totem pole in meaningful feuds right now on Raw, because you have the Randy Orton Edge thing, then you have Drew McIntyre coupled with the Brock Lesnar world title picture, and then you have this, which is almost like you said, it's kind of like the tag team division almost, but for Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins, and the latter being the former Universal Champion and was the face of Raw for almost a year, it's kind of just kind of weird to see that that's where they've, you know, resulted in after such a hot start to the feud.
No, absolutely. I mean, again, I'm not down on it yet. I'm just kind of like meh about it when I don't want to be. And there's things they can do, and this thing could be revived in an instant if, you know, you have maybe a return or something just different needs to happen. Something needs to be at stake other than just we're going to keep fighting the good fight. Like you said, it needs to be something bigger, better, or just a change of direction. Even if it's a slight change, just something is begging to be changed for this. So, all righty. Well, now that we've covered the majority of the big items that are not being reflected on the pay-per-view, let's just jump into the damn pay-per-view. And on my list here, I'm going to start at the damn top. I'm not going to make people wait. The Universal Championship. The Fiend, Bray Wyatt versus Goldberg. Dare I ask what your prediction is on this?
Man, I've really fought back and forth on it, but I'm going to say The Fiend because I just don't see a way that Goldberg walks out with the belt without completely destroying all the good work they've done with Bray Wyatt and The Fiend. And I know WWE shoots themselves in the foot a lot, but I don't think this is something that they would do after months of investment. And, you know, The Fiend took the belt away from Seth Rollins, who had just come off of beating Brock Lesnar twice for it. So that was a pretty big victory. And while they booked Goldberg very, very strongly, and, you know, the whole tagline of spear versus spear, if he was against Roman Reigns, is something that you could just very possibly see Vince McMahon salivating over. I think ultimately they will make the right move and Bray Wyatt will retain, just because, not to be use a cliche, but it really is best for business.
Yes, it is. And I almost talked myself into, in my head, as you were talking about Goldberg possibly winning this. And there's an argument to be made for it, unfortunately, for Goldberg to win this, that he could come out of here You know, he could be the one to conquer the Fiend. It's Goldberg. You know, we know his record of, my God, 173-0, all of that. They've done a, you know, great job of reminding people who Goldberg is. Certainly the spear this past Thursday or Friday on SmackDown would tend to tell you by basic wrestling booking that the person who gets the advantage on the show before the pay-per-view typically loses at the pay-per-view, although that's not a tried-and-true method. It's probably about 75% accurate. And having him win here, you could certainly set up for Roman and Roman Reigns and Goldberg here, but the problem is, while that match, Reigns and Goldberg, is probably WrestleMania-worthy on an attraction level, not from a wrestling-quality level, I think you're doing a huge disservice to Bray Wyatt, one of the most unique characters that WWE has ever had, ever, in the history of the business, and having him just get, just for lack of a better term, and pun intended, I guess, speared out of relevancy, and having Goldberg capture the belt, number one, would turn Goldberg heel. I really believe it would turn Goldberg heel, instantly heel, and it would have a lot of, I think, ill will. The fans would have a lot of ill will towards the WWE itself for doing that. This would go beyond just, oh, well, you're playing a part. It would go, I think you would see trending like cancel WWE Network on Twitter. Like, I think it would be that big of a deal. But unfortunately, there's a case to be made. Long story short, I think the Fiend walks out of there after defeating Goldberg with a mandible claw. I guess the only other thing to ask you is, how long does this match last?
I think it's going to be short and sweet, and I think that's the best way for it to go, because A, I think the Fiend is best suited for short and sweet matches. I think when it goes as long as it did with Daniel Bryan, while it was a good match, it kind of exposes a bit of the character for what its limitations are. And well, there's not much to say about Goldberg. He's not a guy that can typically go more than 5 minutes, and sometimes that's being generous. So I think it will be kind of like spear, jackhammer, kick out, Sister Abigail, mandible claw, something along the lines of that.
Yeah, it's just going to be a match of finishers. I think it's just like, if they do, if there's a even a punch thrown, I'll be shocked. Like, seriously, I mean, I'm being a bit facetious, but I think that ultimately it's going to be, yeah, power move, finish, kick out, finish. And then, yes, he ultimately will get taken down with the mandible claw, and he'll lay there like a dead fish. And that's fine. I think that's fine. I think maybe what we see come out of this is what I thought we would come out of with The Fiend and Daniel Bryan at the Royal Rumble, in exposing what his possible weakness is. Now, I don't know. I don't think that Rambling Rabbit has alluded to his weakness again. And maybe that was just something mentioned in passing and they're not going to follow up on it. It's been, 5 weeks now since that was even mentioned. But maybe that's something that comes out of this, is in a loss that we somehow see a glimpse into what Bray Wyatt's weakness could be. I mean, you're facing a legend like Goldberg, and yes, to say legend, I guess, depends on your definition of legend, but when you're talking about, you know, faces of companies at different times of their existence, Goldberg certainly is a legend in that regard. And to take out somebody like Goldberg, you have to use and maximize your minutes for what you're doing with this legend, because this is a rare opportunity you're getting with a legend in the business. Again, I say that term loosely, but he is. And you need to do something other than just defeat him. There needs to be something else attached to this. So maybe that's what they do.
Yeah, I could see that. It has to carry some legitimacy. It can't just be looked at as like a one-off and just a side show attraction. Aside from the fact that, whether you like it or not, Goldberg is a legend in the business, he has to maybe build off of it in some way, so I could fully see that as well.
All right. Well, so both of us agree on that. The Fiend will probably come out of there as champion, and I don't know. I'm not putting it against Goldberg to come out as champion, but I am very, very interested to see what the crowd reaction would be if the Goldberg walks out with the belt. All right. Moving down the line here, the next huge match on the card, Brock Lesnar, Ricochet. What do you think, Anthony?
I think that Brock Lesnar is going to kind of put on his best performance in the ring here. because he's a guy that everyone seems to think can't wrestle, when I don't think that he can't wrestle. I just think that he maybe doesn't want to all the time, and that the character itself is just best served for kind of like Goldberg and The Fiend, short and sweet. We've seen him before in his first run, up until he left in March of 2004, that he can go when he wants to go. And you've had guys like John Cena say that he's the best ever in the ring. And obviously Ricochet, we know what he does in the ring, A+, across the board, arguably the best in-ring guy right now. And I think that this is going to be a really entertaining match. I expect this to be the best match on the card. I do think Brock Lesnar wins. I think that's undisputed. I don't think you'd find one person who actually believes that Ricochet has a snowball's chance in hell of winning this match. And I think Brock is going to turn a lot of heads and show that when he can go.
Yes. This match is, you know, I put a poll up on Twitter and I asked people what I think is going to be a longer match, The Fiend and Goldberg or Bray or Lesnar and Ricochet. And most people agreed that it's going to be Ricochet and Brock Lesnar, and I would tend to agree with that. I think that this match is, as I've said before in last week, that this is a match that's about Ricochet, I think, more than it's about Brock Lesnar. It's about building the next star. That's what it's always about. It's always been about in wrestling. And this should not be a Kofi Kingston 8-second special. This should be a somewhat hard-fought match by Brock and Ricochet. I think the story told here is what I've been saying all along. It's speed. And that's what's going to be on the side of Ricochet. And that's the story they'll tell. That's his only leg to stand on will be his speed. And it's how long he can hang with Brock before he finally gets caught in an F5 and put down for the 3 count. So to me, this is about the performance that Ricochet can put on to put eyeballs on him to create the next star, as they should. If they end up beating Ricochet in under 10 seconds, that is, to me, that's just stupid for business. That's just dumb business. That won't just piss me off as a wrestling fan. That's just like, hey, this is bad for, like, money. Like, your business model, that's terrible. Like, you do not want to do that. I mean, I understand why they did it with Kofi. In this case, this is not Kofi Kingston. He is not the kind of defined mid-carder and life, midlife, or I'm sorry, the lifelong mid-card defined wrestler that Kofi Kingston is. This is Ricochet, a young upcoming talent that is really got sky's the limit for this guy. So to me, it's Brock defeating Ricochet after a couple of hope spots and the speed telling the story. Brock wins, and then you get a claymore out of nowhere from Drew McIntyre getting his statement in, as WWE would like to say, and flattening Brock Lesnar as he stares at the WWE championship.
Yeah, I don't think they'll go the Kofi Kingston route. You know, Kofi Kingston was passe, and that was them almost saying through a metaphor that, like, okay, you guys had your fun with him, but, like, he won't be back here, as opposed to Ricochet, who he's just starting out. Hey, he's been on the main roster for, what, about a year now? So I think they're just giving him a chance to shine. I think given the fact that Brock only, you know, picks and chooses to like guys to go with, that he sees something in him. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a really entertaining match. I expect to be the best match on the card. I think it's fairly predictable that Brock will walk out with WWE Championship. But aside from that, I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I am too. I really am. You know, and I think that it's going to be an entertaining match to see how close they can get Ricochet to making people believe he can pull it off. He can pull it off. And ultimately, he's just going to get his ass F5'd and, you know, 10 German suplexes later. So, all right, moving on to the next match, the Raw Tag Team Championship, as we just briefly discussed, Seth Rollins and Murphy versus the Street Profits. I don't have a whole lot to say about this. Other than, I mean, I don't know how Seth Rollins and Murphy lose this. I just don't. This group needs gold, which will help them gain momentum. It's about Seth Rollins. He doesn't even have a defined group name. I hope he comes up with one at some point. But his group of disciples, I guess I'll say for now, I think this will be an entertaining match. I think wrestling quality will be solid. I expect it maybe like 10, 15 minutes, maybe longer. Ultimately, with Seth Rollins and Murphy coming out on top, I just do not see a world in which the Street Profits win here. Do you?
No, not at all. Like, I didn't even know this match was on the card, clearly thrown together last minute after Raw. I think there's not just really any substance to this match. I'm sure it'll be a good in-ring match, but as far as for the meaning of it, I don't think the Street Profits are ready to be tag team champions. Like you said about the group that Seth is leading, they need some goal to legitimize them, and I just don't see any way that the Street Profits walk out with the titles.
No, I mean, I really don't have anything more to say here, so I'm going to move on to the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. I mean, I really don't. I mean, like you said, it's a thrown-together match that makes no sense to do because the Street Profits haven't earned a damn thing, and I just don't like the formula of attack a champion and get a championship match. I mean, that is just the formula that makes no sense to me in a simulated sports environment, but it's something that just continues to happen. Just all you have to do, you just attack a champion and you get an opportunity. I mean, that's ultimately what it is. So the SmackDown Tag Team Championship of the New Day versus John Morrison and The Miz. I'll quickly give my thoughts on this. I think this could be, again, a very, very solid in-ring performance by all men involved here. Honestly, this one isn't as, you know, lock it up and throw away the key decision as the other three matches we just discussed that seemed to be a fait accompli. This one, you could make a case for John Morrison and The Miz, considering that they're a newly reformed group that have just reunited with one another. They've got decent heel heat. They've got good chemistry. They have a history. But as we saw on SmackDown, the Usos and New Day came face to face, and Usos said, like, hey, after your Super Showdown and you retain, we could do this thing one more time. And we certainly know that the New Day versus the Usos is, I mean, they always have great matches. But if the New Day lose and Morrison and Miz come out on top, that doesn't mean that you can't have a triple threat tag team, you know, ladder match at WrestleMania. So this one's not easy to call because either way, the Usos are going to be involved, and I think all three teams are going to be involved at WrestleMania. I'm going to say John Morrison and The Miz win here just for the fact of I think it's the New Day don't need the belts, and you're going to have probably a triple threat tag team ladder match at WrestleMania anyway with all involved.
Yeah, I'm going with Morrison and The Miz too. I think that they've been really good together since Morrison came back and they reunited. And like you said, you know, the New Day, while they're good with the belts and they legitimize the belts, they don't need them. And, you know, the SmackDown Tag Team division is very deep. And that's not including Heavy Machinery, who's, we're not even in touch on what's going on there, and Ziggler and Bobby Roode. This is just a very deep division, and I think giving it to Morrison and The Miz to lead into WrestleMania, to maybe do a triple threat ladder match or something of that magnitude, maybe not a ladder match, but a triple threat match of some fashion between the three teams. I just like what Morrison and The Miz are doing right now. I really like Miz since he turned heel again. I never liked him as a babyface, and John Morrison is just doing what he does, and yeah, I really think, I'm pretty confident to say that I think that Morrison and The Miz are going to win the SmackDown Tag Team titles.
Yeah, and I'm fine with it. I have no issue with it whatsoever. We all believe in unison, the New Day do not need the belts. Morrison and The Miz, I think, could be much more entertaining with the belts rather than hiding pancakes behind them. I'm all for it. So, yes, and I think that, honestly, at WrestleMania, again, we're two steps ahead of ourselves. But sometimes you can kind of see the writing on the wall. And in this case, having New Day, Miz and Morrison, and the Usos involved in a triple threat match at WrestleMania, that could be a hell of a ladder match or TLC, whatever kind of gimmick they'll throw together, and they will. That could be, I think, a top flight match at WrestleMania and could potentially steal the show. Again, for a match that doesn't even exist yet, we're fantasy booking to WrestleMania, but certainly it looks like they're headed that way. All right. King Corbin versus Roman Reigns. I feel like I'm just going to, you know, record me saying that and just press play here. I think this is a match I don't even need to say that we're all sick of. To say that we're sick of is underestimating it grossly. By that same token, they work well together. So with that just very predictable criticism out of the way, they work very well together. They never have a stinker of a match. Corbin has been really good as a heel, and a steel cage match is predictably the final thing that you should do. And I'm fine with it. I think this could be a very good match. You know, maybe 3 stars out of 5 if, you know, they even put in half the effort. They've worked so much together that they could probably do it in their sleep at this point. I expect Roman Reigns to probably do what he did to Brock Lesnar at the Saudi Arabia event, what, 1.5, 2 years ago, and maybe spear him through the cage to end the match. Or maybe after he wins, spear him through the cage and make a definitive exclamation point that this is over. I don't think there's a person in this world, just like a lot of the matches on this card, that believe Roman Reigns should lose. Roman Reigns wins here. There's seriously no surprise shocker that would make sense to me. It would be a stupid decision. Roman needs to come out on top here, and I think he will. Do you possibly think anything else is possible here?
No, I'm really surprised that they did this again. I thought the Royal Rumble match, which they did a really good job, and I enjoyed that match, the Falls Count Anywhere, was the blow-off, but I think this is just an extension of that, rather. And it's going to be more the same. I'm sure it'll be a good match. I'm sure it'll be entertaining. I like Corbin and Roman Reigns, like him or hate him. He's good in the ring. But, yeah, there's no way that Corbin wins this. Roman Reigns will emphatically win and hopefully put an end to this program once and for all.
Yeah, it better be. I mean, could you imagine the fans if this thing continues? I mean, it... All right. Well, yeah. So again, I'm fine with the match. I'm looking forward to this match simply for the fact that we can finally say this is their final match. Although I'm very leery of when WWE books it and frames it and markets it like that, because we've seen them go back on their word in the past. I mean, when they did that with Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, that this is their final encounter, and, you know, a few months later, they're, you know, in a tag team match against each other. I mean, so when WWE says that, I don't believe them. It just tells me that they are going their separate ways for now, not forever. So, which is fine. It's just going to be interesting to see how Reigns' reaction is after he gets away from Corbin and gets to somebody else. I'm very interested to hear the crowd reaction. All right, SmackDown Women's Championship, Bayley versus Naomi. I'm going to toss it to you, Anthony.
I'm going to go with Bayley just because I don't think there's been enough of a build to take the belt off of Bayley. I know her run has been kind of lackluster, but at the same time, I think the women's division on SmackDown is deep, but it's not too top heavy. And while Naomi is a former women's champion, the SmackDown women's champion, I believe 2 times, I don't think that there's been enough of a build to, you know, justify her dethroning Bayley. Bayley, especially with Sasha Banks nowhere to be found, is undisputedly at the top of the food chain on SmackDown. I think she's going to hold it a bit longer, probably until WrestleMania, to whom she loses it to. Maybe it could be Naomi at WrestleMania, but as of right now, I don't see Naomi taking the belt away from her.
No. Dude, I just... I think it's not... This is definitely not one that I would... you bank on, especially compared to the rest of the card. This probably seems to be so far the one that's the least predictable. But again, for all the reasons you just mentioned, Naomi, just, she is a great athlete. She's entertaining in her entrance. She certainly gets fans excited, especially younger fans. She's very marketable. All of that. There's a lot of reasons to like Naomi as champion. There's not a lot of reasons to like Naomi as champion at Super Showdown. I think that at WrestleMania, it's going to be some kind of multi-woman match, ultimately having Bayley lose. And I think that either it's going to be Naomi or it's going to be Lacey Evans, who they seem to be really, really trying hard, like really hard every week, to make her relatable and try to reconcile her sins of the past of calling people nasties this week, saying that it's a term of endearment. I don't know about you. I have never heard the word nasty mean a term of endearment in any context, but they are really trying to drive home, I'm a mom, I'm former military, just trying desperately to get the fans behind her, which tells me that they're setting her up for something bigger. So could it be a win for the SmackDown Women's Championship at WrestleMania? Absolutely could be. So in some kind of multi-woman match at WrestleMania, I would either see Naomi or Lacey Evans coming out on top, but... short term, Bayley retains here. It's probably going to be by some kind of hook or crook.
Yeah, I just, for all the reasons you just mentioned, I think their eyes are more on the long term for the SmackDown Women's Championship. You know, I like Naomi, and she has some credibility as a former champion, but just it's not quite there yet. I prefer Lacey Evans. I've liked her since she debuted, and I feel like the taking is there for the top spot as the babyface on the women's side on SmackDown. And I think they're kind of grooming her for that. You know, Naomi, not that she's been there, done that, but, you know, she had her shot at 3 years ago in 2017 when she won the title in her hometown of, I believe it was Orlando. Yep. Yeah, you were there, were you not?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, so, like, she's kind of had it already. And I could see Lacey Evans, you know, evolving into a legitimate top babyface on SmackDown. I think it'll be a good match between Naomi and Bayley, but I just don't think the time is right to pull the trigger on a title change. Although I haven't really loved the Bayley title run, I can at least respect that they've tried to legitimize her as the top talent on SmackDown.
I can too. I can respect that. And I think, like you said, though, the big key here that is SmackDown is really desperately missing a top babyface. Lead women's babyface, and Naomi certainly could fit the bill in time, and Lacey Evans too, if she continues on her path. And you know, I'm telling when I was saying about how WWE is transparently trying to get the fans to relate and like her and forgive her for her sins, it's going to take time, and I think that time could maybe even be not until sometime later this year, and that's fine. Maybe I'm not totally ready for a run with Lacey Evans as SmackDown Women's Champion, and I'm saying that, you know, 5-6 weeks out of WrestleMania, but that could change, and I'm fine with that. But I think Naomi right now, you could argue, has probably got the biggest babyface reaction out of anybody, and that maybe is probably because of her entrance that is by far the most visually appealing than any other babyface. Yeah, and obviously you throw Sasha Banks in the mix here. I mean, she has just been MIA. Where the hell is Sasha? I mean, we don't know. Is she going to come back and support Bayley? Is she going to come back and accidentally cost Bayley the belt or cost her a match? We don't know, but I think ultimately Sasha is probably going to be thrown into this four-way, assuming it's a four-way of Bayley versus Sasha versus Lacey versus Naomi at WrestleMania, at least again. This is a early prediction, but that's how I see it panning out.
Yeah, you know, it could go a couple different ways here. It's just I think that there's more to be had to change the belt than this match right here. I don't know what they're doing with Sasha. I hope she does come back, but it seems like the relationship between her and the fans and WWE is souring more and more as we get on here. But yeah, I think they've done a good job of legitimizing Bayley at the top of the food chain on SmackDown, and I think it just kind of be a disservice to all of that and all that goodwill to make her just drop it after such a little build with Naomi.
Yeah, no, I just don't see it. So, again, the short version is Bayley's championship isn't going anywhere on Thursday. So, all right, and then we have our final match, and get ready for it, folks. Let's see if I can pronounce this. This is not good. The Tuake Trophy Gauntlet match, which is Rusev versus R-Truth versus AJ Styles, Andrade, Eric Rowan, and Bobby Lashley. It's basically just your random assortment of wrestlers that are kind of left over with nothing else to do for a gauntlet match that means less than the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal and less than the Best in the World Trophy of the tag team or Shane McMahon's Best in the World. This is just a kind of a Little League participation trophy that these six, seven men are going to be fighting for, in which, honestly, I mean, it's hard for me to pick a winner because I don't care who wins this. But if I was going to choose, I would probably say AJ Styles. And he brags about how much it means. Any kind of consolation prize trophy are usually best reserved for heels. So I think AJ Styles wins this. Do you have a pick?
I was going to go AJ Styles as well for two simple reasons. I think that who he's fighting against or who else is left, like who would take it, you know, Bobby Lashley I can't really see that. He doesn't really have the character to fit that. And aside from that, there is really nobody even who sniffs the level of AJ Styles. And I think that they're going to build him towards The Undertaker WrestleMania. That's what I've heard. So I think him winning this tournament, giving him something to brag about to legitimize him even more after kind of some months of obscurity, would be good to lead him into The Undertaker. And like I just said, he's kind of been doing a whole lot of nothing for a few months now. Like, he had a short-lived feud revisited with Randy Orton in late December, early January. But pretty much since the Rumble where he got hurt, and maybe even a bit before that, he really hasn't been doing anything. And if the reports are true that he's going to square off against Taker, this would be a good thing to kickstart that run.
Exactly. That was going to be my point, too, is that this is going to be something AJ probably brags about on Raw, maybe for a couple weeks, or maybe they pay it off on the next Monday Night Raw about how, you know, he's faced everyone and look what I've done now. There's nothing left for me to do, or something along those lines. And then the gong goes off. Absolutely could happen. It could even happen at Super Showdown for all I know. And there's rumors of Taker possibly appearing on the show. I don't think he needs to. I would let this build maybe a couple more weeks until after the Chamber, and which is when I would like to see Undertaker if they're going that road. And certainly this match, presumed match, boy, there's a lot of presumptions to WrestleMania that we've been talking about. But if the presumed match is going to take place, this is the best case scenario for Undertaker. I think this is probably the best match Undertaker could, or best opponent he could ask for to have the best possible match that he could have in his condition. I mean, there's no better person to carry the load of the match than AJ Styles. I mean, he's the opposite of Goldberg. So I think that that is going to play well and hide Undertaker's weaknesses and play to his strengths, where AJ could oversell his punches and Taker doesn't have to use, you know, a whole lot of speed. There's things that are really, really positive for Undertaker in that match. And so, yeah, I'm thinking AJ Styles simply for the fact of him bragging to get the gong. I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, and like you just said, AJ could have a match with a broomstick. So
yep,
it's a good counter for The Undertaker, who at this stage of his career really needs someone who could carry the load. We saw what a disastrous match with Goldberg was, so I'm sure they don't want to repeat that. I just think even for AJ, it's a good legitimate opponent to face. And, you know, he's a guy that deserves better than what he's had over the last few months. He's, in my mind, the best superstar they have right now in terms of talent and charisma. So I'm excited to see him go up against The Undertaker if that is in fact the case. It's one of the few guys that they have on the roster right now that wouldn't be a complete disaster to go up against The Undertaker. And yeah, I just think for this particular match at Super Showdown, he is the easiest, obvious, and right pick to win.
No question. I mean, to kind of put a bow on the predictions, this pay-per-view seems 95% extremely predictable. And that's not necessarily a bad thing if it's the right decision. I think that this pay-per-view has the potential to over-deliver, because a lot of people look at Super Showdown and immediately just downplay it and start talking negatively about it, especially with, again, the culture and environment of Saudi Arabia and all the issues that the journalist who was chopped up last year or 2 years ago, whatever it was. There's a lot there, and people just immediately have a negative knee-jerk reaction about it. But this could be a pay-per-view that people talk about, and talk about for a good reason. You know, it's possible. This also could be a pay-per-view that totally bombs, and I could see that as well. The one thing we didn't talk about, because I didn't see his name on here, was Mansoor, who is not promoted to be in any kind of match, but is the hometown folk hero for Saudi Arabia, the Saudi Arabian born superstar that WWE has. And he just tends to win these Royal Rumbles and, you know, the things that are, you know, whatever. I don't know. What did he win last time? It was like some kind of battle royal, I think he won. And, you know, the crowd went crazy for him. And he talked about, oh, you can achieve anything, and gives us the tired old I believed and you can believe if you put your mind to it, all the same platitudes that are talked about from all the baby faces in WWE, that are very tiresome to me. But where do we see Mansoor in here? I'm sure that when he comes out, he's going to get a hometown hero's welcome.
Yeah. Now that you bring it up, I'm not really sure. Maybe they throw in some pre-show battle royal, or I don't know what they could do. I think last time they were there, he had a one-on-one match with Cesaro, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. So yeah, I'm not really sure. There's not a lot of publicity for him, and there's not. Maybe he shows up in the gauntlet match. I can maybe see that. But then would he possibly beat AJ Styles in the gauntlet match? If he were to show up in that, he would be my pick. And then AJ could, build off being upset about it. But aside from the gauntlet match, I don't really see a place for him showing up unless they, just grow a last minute match out of the ground.
Which is, it's happened before. And I could see it happening, or a heel coming out and running their mouth, and Mansoor comes out and, flattens them. I mean, it's very possible. So I think somehow, some way, without question, Mansoor will be involved. And we all sit at home and go, why are they reacting to this like it's Stone Cold's return? Sure. And, it's because that's what it sounds like. We're like, I remember sitting at home like, why is this guy getting this type of reaction? And then you realize where he was born, and that answers your question. So, I think that this is going to be an overall, I think it has the potential to be a good pay-per-view. I'm looking forward to it from the perspective of just not necessarily who's going to win, but how they win, because that is, to me, how I'm going to look at it, through the lens of how they win and how long it takes our picks to win, because this is a very, very predictable card, which sounds like a negative, but if it's the right choice, I'm not against predictability.
Yeah, that's it. Like, predictability is good sometimes when it is the right choice. So, because sometimes I think people get it mistaken with, like, well, not everything could always be unpredictable. That's not the case. When it's right, it's fine. Like Batista and John Cena winning the world titles at WrestleMania 21, it was predictable, but both the right choice. But then in the case of the Women's the Elimination Chamber match, that's when the predictability isn't good. So, I don't know. This show is going to be predictable, but for all the good points in my mind.
Definitely. And I'm looking forward to it. And I think 98% of the people, at least in the United States, are probably going to watch this show on delay. So we all have to avoid social media from like noon on Thursday. I know I'm going to have to just to turn off my damn phone and not refresh Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or any of that, and just go dark until I get home and I'm able to watch it, because I don't want anything spoiled. So just for those out there, please don't tweet at me. I'm not going to be watching this show live, and you're probably not either. So I'm looking forward to this pay-per-view. I really am. I mean, I think I've talked myself into, regardless of predictability, this has potential to be a really, I think, decent show.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good. Like, if you could just get behind the whole blood money, blah, blah, blah stuff, it's going to be a good show. I don't think it's going to have any real crucial points to it in the sense of impacts on storylines of heading towards WrestleMania, because I don't think any major titles or anything are going to change. But I'm sure it will be entertaining matches. There's not one match that I really look up there and say, oh, like, I'm really dreading that one. But I'm kind of afraid of what's going to happen with The Fiend and Goldberg. But if it is what it is and it's predictable in the sense that The Fiend will win, I don't really have a problem with it. It'll just give The Fiend more credibility heading into WrestleMania. So, yeah, I am looking forward to this pay-per-view.
Yeah, and for those that are saying, oh, my God, I don't want to see Goldberg, don't forget, I mean, if you look at the median time of his matches, I'm sure it's under 5 minutes. So even if you don't even want to see Goldberg, you don't want to see Brock, guess what? They'll probably combine for an under 10 minutes of the show. I mean, seriously, because Brock and Ricochet will probably go 8 minutes, and The Fiend and Goldberg could go 2. I mean, I could absolutely see that happening. So I think it's going to be a good pay-per-view. I'm interested to see if there are any surprises that maybe we're not thinking of, but this is going to be an interesting show, and then we'll be back to regularly scheduled programming with our normal pay-per-views of Chamber, and then boom, onto the big one at WrestleMania. So, well, Anthony, before we head out here and call it a night, Is there anything that you wanted to touch on, expand upon, or just briefly discuss?
No, I think we pretty much covered everything.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on, and I know that you'll be watching the pay-per-view probably around the same time I do, whenever you get home from work on Thursdays as I do, and it'll be late evening before I have any idea what the hell happened. So please, guys, don't tweet at me and spoil it for me. I'm begging you. And so that puts us we'll be after Chamber, I think, the next time that we talk. It'll be post-Chamber if it's 2 weeks from Thursday. Or it could be Chamber Night. I don't have the math on me right now. So if it's Chamber Night, then we'll obviously have to do it the night before. Yeah, so we'll be on the final stop before WrestleMania the next time we talk.
Yeah, really looking forward to it, and it's going to be a fun time to do a show, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, Anthony, thanks so much for coming on. Before you head out, though, let everyone know how they can get in touch with you if you want to share that.
You can follow me at ADeMarco25 on Twitter.
Super easy, right? There you go. Love it. All right.
First
well,
plus DeMarco25. Not too hard.
No. It's very straightforward. So give him a follow, guys. It's an entertaining follow. And yes, I have to say, there's hockey tweets. But that's okay because the Rangers from the little bit that I've watched are on a pretty good hot streak and could possibly sneak into the playoffs. I know that you don't care about the Rangers, but that's something I have noticed. I'm like, ooh, right? So
yeah, they're on a bit of a heater right now, and they're kind of in a transition period. But yeah, the Rangers are a team to watch for sure over the next month or so.
All right. Well, Anthony, thanks so much for coming on, and we will be talking in just a few short weeks.
Can't wait, man. Talk to you then.
All right. Yep. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEpodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWE podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.